So resonant converters are covered in chapter 19 of the Erickson and Maksimovich text, which is something I expect that you all likely have, but is not a required text for this course. They begin their analysis using something called the sinusoidal approximation, which we'll go over very briefly a little bit later in the course. It's not as accurate as doing state plane analysis. State plane analysis itself is not covered in the text, but it's used kind of behind the scenes. There are a couple places in the text where they say, here's our result, and the exact result is this. If you look at it, you can kind of see, based on the shape of the equations, that probably comes from state plane analysis. Okay. In general, in the past, resonant converters really kind of came into popularity for applications where AC waveforms of very high voltage were needed or very high current. So induction heating, or using actual magnetic induction to heat metals in heavy industry, needs extremely high currents. AC is fine. Gas discharge lamps need very high voltage to ignite the lamp, and then AC waveforms to maintain it. Electrosurgical generators, high voltage, high frequency, used for medical applications. Originally, these resonant converters were really inverters. You look something like a half bridge with a resonant tank at the end, maybe a transformer to generate high voltage, high current. Following that, in the last maybe 20 years, resonant DC to DC converters have become popular in high frequency applications, where as you move towards high frequency, parasitics of the circuit become significant, and resonant type behaviors can be used to actually absorb those into the circuit operations. They're no longer parasitic. So advantages, absorbing those parasitics and the possibility of obtaining soft switching remains to be determined based on analysis and topology selection. Disadvantages are really complexity and then higher stresses, which we'll talk about a little bit in a moment. So before we took a brief aside to cover some topics for the Tiny Box Challenge, we were talking about this dual active bridge converter. Here I'm just reviewing the circuit and the waveform, and I'm drawing the circuit with this capacitor CR. Discussed briefly, we said this could be used to prevent transformer saturation in the event that the voltage applied here wasn't purely AC, and we just make it some big value, as big as we can tolerate in our design, and then it won't really affect anything. It'll just prevent any DC voltage from being applied to the transformer. If I have a very small DC component, I might see a few hundred millivolts dropped across this cap to block it, but otherwise everything's going to look the same as our normal waveforms. Okay. When I say we make that very large, one way to think about that is, how does the impedance of this capacitance affect the behavior of the resonant tank? To examine that, what I'm going to look at is a frequency spectrum here, where without worrying about values, I'm looking at log of frequency on the x-axis. If I look at, for example, this voltage here, V sub t, that is not worrying too much about the resonant waveforms, but even if I did, it's pretty close to a square wave at the switching frequency. So the spectrum generated by that square wave is going to look like, if I do a Fourier series of it, I'm going to have components at FS, 3FS, 5FS, so on, but it should be more or less purely AC. If I have some error in my modulation signals, maybe I have a small DC component back here at zero. I'm going to draw back here. If you're paying close attention to me, you'll tell me that on a logarithmic axis, zero should be minus infinity, but I hope you'll forgive my abusive notation. So this is really the spectrum of VP. And I'm going to look at the impedance here, the series impedance the VP is going to be applied to, and it's going to be in series with what we see over at the load. We'll call this Z tank. Z tank is just the impedance of LL and CR. Okay. And if I plot the magnitude of that impedance down here, it's going to look like a series LC. And what I've told you is I've designed C to be very large, L to be however I optimize the design of this converter based on the DAB operation. So what that's going to look like is I'm going to have some magnitude of SL and some magnitude of 1 over SC. And my net impedance of the two of these in series is going to track C at low frequency and then have some resonance. And then track SL at high frequency. And because I've designed C to be very large, I'm pushing this asymptote down. My resonance is at some frequency well below my switching frequency. It gives me a big enough impedance to block this DC, but it really doesn't affect anything up here. Here my impedance is pretty much exactly my inductor impedance, so it's not going to change the response of my AC components. Make sense? Okay. So that's all fine and good. We don't need to reanalyze everything. We can just say, look, it blocks the DC, and other than that, it behaves like a DAB. Now let's throw a wrench in the works and say, well, what if I decided to do this? Now what I'm doing is decreasing my capacitance to push this resonance up to the vicinity of my switching frequency. Okay. And we're going to push up closer and closer until eventually that resonance is right on top of the switching frequency. How does that affect my converter behavior? And what it's going to do is really change our converter over to something called the series resonant converter. The topology is very new and exciting, schematic, like nothing you've ever seen before, save for the fact that it's exactly the same. Okay. So the only difference here is that I've decreased CR to the point where this LC resonance here in my tank is comparable to the switching frequency. And what that's going to do is, rather than having really no change in the voltage here, I'm going to have a significant change in the voltage on this capacitor during the switching period. And it's going to alter my waveforms from what I had in the DAB, so that now I have very clear sinusoidal segments in this waveform. Okay. So relative to the DAB, where my IL was this nice trapezoid, now it's got kind of sinusoidal bumps on it. And from that, you can begin to see this point here that with these resonant converters, I'm going to end up with higher stresses. Right? So for the DAB, this was my IL. If this was my I out, my reflected I out, my N times I out. Where we kind of talked about this a few lectures ago, that one of the really neat things about this dual active bridge is in this operating mode where I have flat inductor current, if I can minimize TC, I get to the point where really my current stresses are pretty much equal to my average output current. Now if I make things sinusoidal, average current, if I'm lucky, is here, and I'm always going to be going up to a peak. Even if I really minimize my control, my phase shift in this converter, I'm still going to have significant overcurrent, and my peak stresses are going to be higher than what they would have been in the DAB at that single operating point. Once we start getting into these resonant converters, really, much like the DAB, there are a lot of different modes of operation. So the waveforms I'm sketching here are to give a starting point. They apply for a very specific mode of operation where I have specific timing of all my switches and operating conditions. This is the same mode we looked at for the DAB, so these are going to be the phase shift modulation waveforms. What that means, shown at the top here, is I'm again switching, I'm driving G1 and G4 with the same signal, G2 and G3 with the same signal, to generate a voltage here, VP, which is VG, then minus VG, back to plus VG. At the output, doing the same thing, plus the out, minus the out, and then I'm phase shifting the two. So I've got this shift between what the bridges are generating, and I use that shift to control the power flow. So we're going to go through and analyze this with state plane analysis during lecture today. I'm going to consider the same case as we did with the DAB, where V out equal to N times VG. And I'm going to use state plane analysis, and I'm going to look at the state plane of CR and LL. And in order for me to sketch this on a single state plane, what I'm going to have to do is ignore device capacitance. Okay? I'm going to assume device capacitance is negligible, doesn't affect the waveforms of this converter, and we'll go back and look at that after the fact. So, and then I'm going to look at the M sub R, J sub L state plane. Where M sub R is the normalized voltage on the cap, J sub L is the normalized current in this tank inductor. I'm going to use the base is VG, and with this, my R naught is going to be root LL over CR. So given these kind of waveforms describing this particular mode of operation, I'm going to give those some labels that are going to help us with drawing the state plane. I'm going to talk about my subintervals. I'll call this subinterval 1, this subinterval 2, 3. Oops, I missed 4. And then I'm going to label currents J1 minus J2 minus J3. And J4, and voltages V1, V2, minus V3, minus V4. And labeled all the way across. Immediately looking at this from your experience with the dual active bridge, you'll tell me I probably don't need to analyze through all 4 subintervals. This thing has the same symmetry that we saw on the dual active bridge, where it's half period anti-symmetric on all the AC waveforms. So pretty good guess is going to be that J1 and J3 are the same, J2 and J4 are the same. Same thing with voltages. If I just analyze periods 1 and 2, I can throw a negative sign on them and repeat for the second half of the period. So we'll start here from subinterval one. Subinterval one, where my primary side voltage is VG, my secondary side voltage is Vout. And I'm gonna look at then just my tank here. And in subinterval one, I've got VG and V out. State plane is going to be the M sub R, J sub L axis. So if I simplify this circuit down, I'm going to reflect V out through the transformer to get a V out over N source. Then I'll have C, L, V out over N, V G, my polarity, V R on C R, I L on L L. And then I can combine these two voltage sources together. What I'll get is a voltage source, the same polarity as VR, of a value VG minus V out over N. Anything interesting about VG minus V out over N? This is true. VG is equal to V out over N, so that's zero. This thing really looks like a short across these two elements. Okay, so on my MRJ cell axis, where is my DC operating point? 0, 0. My DC is going to be right here. My starting point, I'm going to have to look back at my intended mode of operation to figure out where this starts. So it starts at a current of J4, a voltage of minus V4. Yeah.
So when you're considering V out to equal MVG, are you just basically stating that all the voltage conversion is done by the current ratio?
Right.
Okay, and that's just your base case for solving.
Right. It's going to be simplified analysis. We can look at changing it on any of these converters. I can look at changing from phase shift modulation to other operating modes. But with V out is equal to NVG, there's going to be a lot of simplification in the algebra. That'll be nice for a first look.
Will changing the turns ratio so that that's not zero just move your DC operating point out of the state plane?
It will move the DC operating point on the state plane in this interval, but it's going to change waveforms throughout the entire converter operation. So with where we've gotten so far, just change at that point. But there's going to be a lot of nice things that happen because V out is equal to NVG, and none of them will happen if it's not. So the process would all be the same. We just won't get all the cancellations that we'll get at the end. Yeah. Okay, so I'm just going to pick some point to draw this start. This is a point we called M4, J4. And I'm going to begin resonating with a radius R1. The direction I'm going to go, my current IL was positive. That's feeding into the capacitor. So my resonance is going to go in the direction initially that tends to increase the capacitor voltage, which means that I'm going to go this kind of direction. I'm going to end up somewhere over here at a point M1, J1. Excuse me. Should have been minus M4 based on how I defined that. My starting point, keeping all my M's and J's positive. In this angle, I'm going to give it a name. I'm going to call it alpha. This is my direction for this resonance. Okay. After that interval, based on how I've proposed this operation, I'm going to go into subinterval 2, where the input voltage flips polarity first. My input voltage is my leading change. So what that's going to do is it's going to change my equivalent circuit, but this is VG. This is the out. And now I'm going to look something like VG plus V out over N applied in a negative polarity to CR and LL. Okay. This interval is going to pick up right where we left off. So I'm going to be at this point here, M1, J1. Where's my DC operating point for this resonance? Minus 2. Is equal to VG plus V out over N over V base. V base is VG, and V out over N is VG for how I specified it. Okay. Now I'm going to have a radius that looks like this, R2, and I'm going to resonate in this direction. Down to a point M2 minus J2. I'm going to call this angle beta. Okay. So after that, so I had positive voltage polarity, I flipped the input. Next, I'm going to flip the output, then I'm going to flip the input back, then I'm going to flip the output back. So this is really already our half period of this, and everything during the remaining half period should be anti-symmetric. So for subinterval 3, I'm going to have negative VG here, negative V out here. Going to look same as subinterval 1, but the negative. And we can sketch it here. It's going to look something like this, where I have the same angle alpha, the same radii R1, and I go from M2 minus J2 to M3 minus M3 minus J3 on my M sub R, J sub L axes, and then subinterval 4, with my output. Now I'm going to flip my input back. The going to be the same as submineral 2. Put the negative of all the normalized voltages and currents. I'm going to skip sketching that one because I need to save all my artistry for the next slide, where we're going to sketch the complete state plane across one entire period. My M sub R, J sub L axes. My subinterval 1 went here from minus M4, J4, up and around to somewhere here, the DC at the origin on my axis. R1, R1, alpha, this point we called M1, J1. This was subinterval 1. Subinterval 2 resonated down to M2 minus J2. The radius somewhere out here to a value of minus 2. This is beta, interval 2. And then to complete this, I'm going to have subinterval 4 and subinterval 3 just mirroring these two. My only remaining point here is minus M3 minus J3. Yeah.
Are alpha and beta, well, alpha, for instance, is it necessarily divided over the J axis?
Don't know yet. So at this point, I can make arguments about symmetry between one half period and the other based on all waveforms in the center need to be AC. They should be symmetric. But really, what each of these values are, what each of the angles, don't know yet. You're a step ahead of me. So based on my symmetry arguments, I can get rid of notation for kind of everything down here. And I can say this point and that point should be the negative of one another. Same thing here. So instead of M4 and J4, I'm going to call this minus M2 and J2, the negative of what I have down here. And then this one, I'll call this minus M1 and minus J1. So I get down to just M1 and M2, J1 and J2. And I didn't sketch them, but I know this angle's got to be alpha. That angle has to be beta. So we can really just look at subintervals 1 and 2 and do all our analysis over those. So let's do that. So for subinterval 1, taking our standard approach, I'm going to get two equations, one for alpha and then one relating the triangles formed by R1 on either side. Right? So R1, I'm going to have M2 squared plus J2 squared is equal to M1 squared plus J1 squared. and alpha it's pi minus arctangent of this angle minus arctangent of this angle. This one is going to be m2 over j2. If I want to do pi minus, I'd have to do this angle and this angle. So use an easy color. This thing here and this thing here are going to be respectively arctan of j2 over m2, arctan of j1 over m1, and alpha will be pi minus those. Those are my two equations from subinterval one. I did it this way, it's a bit arbitrary. I could say instead of pi minus the two yellow angles, I could say it's arctan of this angle and arctan of that angle. Any of these are fine. I could also use the law of cosines to get something a little bit more complex with this complete triangle. For subinterval two, I'm going to do the same thing relating my radii. What I'm going to get is on this upper triangle, I've got a length of 2 plus m1 and then a height of j1. So my r2 squared is 2 plus m1 squared plus j1 squared, that's equal to the bottom triangle 2 plus j2 squared, or 2 plus m2 squared, plus j2 squared. And my beta is equal to, let's write this that other way, arctan of j1 over 2 plus m1 plus arctan of j2 over 2 plus m2. Okay. So now I've got four equations. As already pointed out, I could probably begin to see some relationship here or see it back on the graph. But what I'm going to do is FOIL out these two terms in R2 to get some equation here, and I'm going to subtract the equation up top for R1. Okay. So if I multiply this out, what I get is 4 plus 4m1 plus m1 squared plus j1 squared is equal to 4 plus 4m2 plus m2 squared plus j2 squared. And I'm going to combine that with my top equation. I'm going to subtract that off. I'm going to write it like this. M2 squared plus j2 squared equal to m1 squared plus j1 squared. And I'm going to subtract these two. So this term and this term will cancel. I'm going to get 4 plus 4m1 is equal to 4 plus 4m2. Therefore, m1 is equal to m2. Then I can take that, plug back into the top equation, M1 is equal to M2, I'll get M1 squared plus J2 squared is equal to M1 squared plus J1 squared. That's going to tell me J1 is equal to J2. So I really only have 1M, 1J that matter in this state plane. M1 through 4 are all the same thing. J1 through 4 are all the same thing. This is that nice simplification I was talking about. This is true when D is equal to NVG. Won't be true otherwise. We'll still have half cycle symmetry no matter what. But having all M's and all J's the same, unique to the V is equal to NVG case. Okay. And that gets back to your earlier question, Spencer, of is this thing centered? Yes. In this case, now we can conclude, okay, alpha is exactly centered on the y-axis, beta exactly centered on the x-axis. In general, that doesn't have to be the case. All right, so to finish up here, we're going to do our same averaging step. Before I do that, I'm going to write an equation for the complete period. It looks like TS over 2 is equal to T1 plus T2 times my two subintervals. I go through and normalize this. What I'm going to end up with is pi over F is equal to alpha plus beta. Be another equation in our solution set. And then I'm going to average the output current. As we've done with most other converters, I'm going to look at the reflected output current so I can use waveforms on the primary side. So my output current proper looks something like this, subinterval 1, 2, 3, 4. So during subintervals 1 and 2, subinterval 1, subinterval 2, and both of them, the output voltage is applied positive. So the output current is just going to be the inductor current reflected through the transformer. During subintervals 3 and 4, the output voltage is applied negative. So the output current is going to be the negative of the reflected inductor current. So here, I out is IL over N. Here, I out is minus IL over N. So if I want to get my average output current, I can look at N times average value of I out. That's going to look like 2 over TS, integral from 0 to TS over 2. And if I just stick with subintervals 1 and 2 as my half period, during that, the output current is the inductor current, so I can just integrate IL dt. And no surprises here, this is going to come out to be 2 over TS times the integral during subinterval 1, give me some charge, integral during subinterval 2, where Q1 this, Q2 these segments. So from here, what are those two charges? So Q1, the charge during subinterval one, the average of my inductor current. My inductor current happens to be in series with my capacitor. So I could write out an equation for that sinusoid and go and integrate it, or CR times V1 minus V2. Everybody like that? I'm dwelling. Probably some issue with it. So it's got to be either a half or some negative sign. Which one is it? So my change in charge, I'm now looking at a delta V that causes that change in charge. What's the delta V during this subinterval? V1 plus V2. Okay, I'm going all the way from one to the other. Maybe you had it right that you were using non-normalized notation so that everything's positive. But for my notation, this should be CR times V1 plus V2 is equal to 2CR V1, because V1 is V2, we just solved. Okay, what's the charge in subinterval 2? V1 minus V2. Now they're opposite polarity. Is equal to zero. So my end time average value of I out is 2 over TS times 2 CRV1. I normalize that, J equal to N I out over I base, normalize is equal to over FF over pi. F over pi times 2. Oops, missed. M1. And that's my solution to the series resonant converter in this particular operating mode. We'll look into how this operation changes as I change the conditions, things like load and voltage conversion ratio. Also, again, looking into the, as we talked about in the beginning, how the design of this resonant tank, how close my resonant frequency is to my switching frequency, affects the converter waveforms. Okay. Here I started with it in the DAB case much lower, resonant frequency well below my switching frequency, and I'm inching up towards it. I could design it so that my resonant frequency is above my switching frequency. That's going to end up being a very bad thing. So we'll look into that more in the coming classes, picking back up Friday. As a reminder, no class Wednesday, and we do have a homework due Friday throughout the week. I'll be available every day except Wednesday in person, and on Wednesday I'll try to remain available via email for any questions related to the homework or the challenge. Thanks, guys.